Good morning and welcome to Jump In Tucson. It's a beautiful Tuesday. The temperature's starting to climb and some great weather outside. So I appreciate if you're driving through town and you've got us tuned in here on KVOI 1030 The Voice that you're joining us for the 9 o'clock engagement hour. Jump In Tucson, five different hosts, five different days, different topics. And on Tuesdays, we like to focus on getting you involved or getting everybody involved. And today I'm real honored to have a guest with me who's been involved in this community his whole life. And that is Chief Chad Kazmar with the Chief of Police of the Tucson Police Department. So Chief, appreciate you joining us today.
You bet. Good morning, Ted. Good morning, Tucson.
So you were born in Tucson.
Born and raised, third generation, raised in fourth.
And you even stayed for your schooling and stayed at the University of Arizona.
Amphi Theater High School graduate, University of Arizona graduate, and I love Tucson. I love everything about Tucson, like we said, climate, culture, history, and of course our Mexican food.
Well, you've definitely dedicated a lot of your life to service in this community. You know, the purpose of this show is to try to get people involved, and one of the most important things is to make sure everybody does what I think is our civic responsibility, and that's to vote and be an engaged voter and get out there. But there's so many other ways to serve. There's obviously line of service that you've chosen. Public safety is a big one. How did you decide to go down that path?
So I started my journey with the city 28 years ago as a lifeguard. And I actually did a little bit of high school in San Diego with a divorced split family and came back to finish up high school at Amphi and then go to U of A. And so the summer before my freshman year of college, I thought, well, okay, I did quite a bit of surfing and I wasn't an avid swimmer or on a swim team in high school, but you know, I knew how to surf and not drown. I figured I could work a pool and became a lifeguard and a water safety instructor, and it was the best job. In fact, you know, when our oldest son was able, we got him and he was a lifeguard for the city as well. And the, you know, the best thing the city gave me the opportunity was that's where I met my wife. So two summers later, we ended up started dating, and you know, we've been together about 27 years. So yeah, really, my public service started for the city in the Parks and Recreation Department, and I continued to do that through high school. And my initial plan was to be an officer in the Marine Corps, and that plan didn't work out due to some injuries that I had. And once I figured out my sophomore year, junior year, I couldn't do that, I thought, okay, you know, if I can't serve in the armed forces, then I'd love to work for the Tucson Police Department, and just had a heart that I wanted to serve our community.
Well, and you've been now with the force since 2000, so 28 years, obviously, the 27 years with your wife, 28 years in service.
August will be 24 years for me with the Tucson Police Department. It's gone by in a flash. It's been an amazing job. It's provided amazing opportunities for my family. My wife's been able to stay home with our two boys for 17 years. She started doing that when I made the leap to management as a sergeant, but I've had a bunch of really fun assignments. I cut my teeth in patrol in Midtown, Operations Division Midtown, which is really off of 22nd now, Vernon, if you haven't been to that substation. That's not where I started. Actually, our original home was where Ward 6 office now is. So, I think back to the times of when I was a young officer, and I was like, man, I've been here, you know, working for the city for almost three decades now.
It's one of those things, a lot of times you like to say that you've loved every moment of your job, you know, and we say that in the military a lot, and it's not every moment, but the majority of it, it's something we really take a lot of passion with, and I'm sure you feel that way too. Sometimes there's obviously some very difficult times, and that one of those times occurred really since recently with the loss of an officer, and I just wanted to get a sense for you how you believe the department's doing.
Yeah, Adam was the third Tucson Police Department officer that we've lost during my time on the department, and our fourth local public safety, fifth public safety when we talk about our federal partners included. And what we haven't really publicly talked about, and we're going to be doing more of that next week, is also celebrating the life of Detective Jason Southard, who lost his life to COVID. So Adam was actually is the 10th fallen officer, and Jason's the 9th, and we're going to be celebrating Jason's life tomorrow night at our memorial. It's tough. Anytime we lose one of our own or a federal partner here and locally or any officer in the state or the country, like we saw in Charlotte Mecklenburg yesterday, it really hits home. You know, men and women and our team members put their uniform on every morning and every night when they go to work. And it's not a cliche to say, you know, they're not sure if they're going to come home, and they do think about that. And when we lose one of our own, like Adam, on Easter Sunday, it's a traumatic experience for the officer, for the community, for the families. Who it makes it real. It makes the potential the danger of the job that we face every night real and every day. And that takes a toll on the department. And so we have an amazing wellness division and behavioral sciences unit that makes sure that our staff has the support that they need. But this will be a wound that stays open for a long time, and it'll take us years to recover from this.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth. I know on the military side of it, there's lost but never forgotten. And I truly believe that never forgotten piece stays with those of us that serve.
Absolutely. It's the pay's not bad. Of course, it can always be better, and we'll talk about that later. But it's really about having a heart of service and wanting to have a safe community. And there's a small part of the population who's willing to put themselves in harm's way to make sure that we, have a safe and vibrant community. And I share that passion with the mayor, but the foundation of that is having a public safety team that's out there doing the job, and everything else that we want in our community is built upon, this idea that you can go out and you can, go to a restaurant, and you can go buy gas, and you can go to an ATM, and you could not be harmed by somebody else's actions, and it's a safe community.
Absolutely. I think that's important to all of the members of the community. I think everybody wants that. But how can the members of the community, first off, how was their response and support that they provided to you at this time? And do you want to touch a little bit
Sure.
now on what they can do to help support the department?
Yeah, community's response has been amazing. April's been a really challenging month for us, not just with even losing Adam, but it's been a busy, heavy month with traffic fatalities and violent crime. And of course, everybody saw the news last weekend of a college house party that was shot in a drive-by situation. Four young people were shot, including Aaron Jones, who lost her life from Newport Beach, California, a 20-year-old sophomore. Just such a senseless killing, and that just infuriates me and our entire department and our community, just outraged. So we have big challenges, but I want to start with thanking the community and all my bosses, elected officials, the mayor, the manager have been great and supportive, emotionally supportive through this challenging month for us. As far as where do we go from here, it's one of the things that I'm going to continue to reset and reacquire, re-strategize on is really doing a better job of telling our story as a police chief and talking about needs. We're just wrapping up our third year budget. We have some scarcity that's going to happen the next two to three years, fiscal years, because of some sales tax changes up in Phoenix. But the reality is I had financial challenges before that with the police department. So we run about a $200 million budget. We run another $40 million of grants. 95% of that $200 million, Ted, is for personnel cost. So that gives me 5% left to cover all the other needs that we have through the department. So my base budget doesn't include patrol vehicles, detective vehicles, unmarked vehicles, handguns, rifles, less lethal, body armor, Axon Technologies, which by itself is a body more camera and the tasers. That's $4 million. So I start the year at about a $25 million deficit every year. And then I have to work with city leadership through grants and truth and taxation dollars and supplemental funds and, looking for other funding sources to cover the need. That doesn't get into, I have an aging air support unit. I need new helicopters. I want to bring on a plane. That's a tactical tool that we can use to make the officer's job safer and the community safer when we're trying to apprehend these violent offenders. We'd love a new station in the Houghton and I-10 area. That's where a lot of growth in the city's gone, because we have the southwest part of the town covered with a Prop 101 building that's going to be co-location with fire. But we have to start as a community, our voters. We need to start thinking about what that looks like and how we appropriately fund public safety to make sure that we do have a safe community.
Absolutely, Chief, and that's a great point to stop on for our first segment. When we come back, we'll address what your needs are and how we could possibly get some funding for those.
Sounds great.
And some of the other things that you're doing well out there. So you're listening to Ted Maxwell on Jumpin' Tucson. My guest today's Chief Chad Kazmar with the Tucson Police Department, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and my guest today is Tucson Police Department Chief Chad Kazmar. Chief, it was a great discussion in the first segment where we went to some of what the needs are and how we can go about getting them. You've done a great job. I don't know how many people realize in raising some of the salaries?
We have. We worked hard. You know, when we talk about salaries, you really look at what role does that play in retention? And then you look at what role does that play in recruiting? And so it's really important. We're a busy organization, the busiest south of Phoenix. And we need to make sure we have an appropriate pay that's going to attract the best talent in a market where, frankly, most large businesses and organizations are struggling to get people who want to work. And public safety is even more difficult.
Well, it's been a tough maybe decade, maybe not quite so long for public safety. They've had a lot of folks who don't see the value, but I tell you, the first person they want when something's going bad is a police officer.
No, that's a great point, Ted. You know, post-Ferguson, post-George Floyd, we've really shifted and recognized in this country that, okay, maybe we've asked too much for too long of law enforcement specifically as part of the public safety team. And so cities like Tucson have developed programs like community safety, health, and wellness. And we've launched other programs in our 911 centers where we're peeling off 1,000 calls a month of mental health calls that don't go out to a field responder, whether it's police or fire. So we've been creative and we've made some good investments here locally. But when we talk about law enforcement, you know, one of the lines I like to kind of educate people on is really over the past decade, if we look at the basic police training across the country, it hasn't changed. It's still 9 months of training. And we take a 21-year-old adult whose brain is fully developing for the next 3 to 4 years, and we give them a gun and a badge and a camera, and we say, hey, good luck, and go out there and don't make any mistakes. And the reality is they perform really well, you know, like 0.001% of failure rate, and that's impressive with 9 months of training with such a complex job. But when we look at something like a Navy SEAL team who trains 95% of the time and they deploy 5% of the time, our officers train 5% of the time, they deploy 95% of the time.
That's a great point, one I really hadn't thought about. But we do expect them to be near perfect.
We do.
Right out the door.
And so my call to action is then let's invest. So we fortunately do not have a defund environment here in Tucson, and we never really did. I think we certainly had people calling for that, but the reality is human beings only get better through investment and training and repetition and having the right equipment and tools to do their job and supervision and good policy and all those types of things.
So let's talk about the training aspect of it, because I know we're going to get into some of the investment that you need to be a modern police force and a safe police force, both for you, the citizenry and for those who serve. On the training side, can you talk a little bit about what investment's been made and what changes are occurring to make the force better?
So really, let's start with thinking about, okay, in an environment where it's difficult to retain and difficult to attract commissioned police officers, our philosophy is really grow our own. And that idea is let's bring on community service officers, and we've tripled the number of our community service officers over the last 3 years thanks to the investment from the community and mayor and council and city leadership. And the idea is, if we bring them in at 18, we can start to develop the value system and help them make good decisions during those critical years where they might make mistakes that keep them from becoming a police officer. But frankly, that they can also develop their own perspective of what they think and not just base that what they see on, you know, national media. And so we've tripled. We're about 150 community service officers at this point. Another program that we launched on was a professional staff investigator. It's almost like a CSO in the detective ranks. But what we're really trying to do, Ted, is balance the workload, because you can have the brightest, best, most dedicated employee, but if they come to work every day and they feel like they can't get their head above water, they're going to lose resiliency to be able to do that job. So really, we started with being creative and with our community service officers and our professional staff investigators. The next step is technology. We just presented in front of mayor and council on our street racing, violent crime efforts, and how technology can enhance our commitment to evidence-based strategies. Rio Nuevo ponied up like they always do. They've made huge investments in our downtown, both for off-duty officers to keep the downtown space safe, and they've also, again, invested in our technology. So super excited to have that partnership. So it's all those things coming together that, you know, ultimately give us the tools that we need to be successful.
So you mentioned Rio Nuevo's investment for off-duty officers, and obviously that's a great thing for those officers who are willing to spend more time. They can bring a little bit more income into their family, but it's at the same time putting more work burden on them. How, from your perspective right now, how does your staffing sit, and where are you relative to where you, as the chief of this department in the city, the largest city in Pima County, you know, third or second largest city in the state, where would you where would you like to be?
Yeah, we're the 33rd largest city in the country. So all of us who are born and raised here, we think it's the old Pueblo and sleepy little old Tucson. And it isn't. You know, it's 1 degree separation. Everybody knows everyone. But it's 250 geographic square miles. It does take an air support unit to effectively help us cover in that safe environment. I can tell you right now, if we'd had a plane or a helicopter up when Eric Height was working and Patrick Hardesty was working, those gentlemen would probably be alive today. That's what those tools mean. That's the safety that they provide to our community. But we have about 808 officers. We're authorized at 882. My goal is to get us up to 900, but out of those 808, we're about 760 deployable. The rest of those folks are in training. And we have an attrition rate, which is a 50% sustained reduction over the last 3 years, 2.5 years, and we're floating about 3 officers that we lose a month. And that varies from, you know, academy recruits all the way through our senior folks. So I really want to see the goal that I set when I came here is 900 deployable commission officers and 300, mix of 300 community service officers and PSIs.
How's the community service officer pipeline working, or are you at the point where you've had it long enough to see if it's going to work to try to?
It absolutely works, and it's interesting. You know, when I applied, I tested with thousands of applicants for a handful of jobs, and now we're lucky to process 300 to 500 applicants. And get, you know, we will not reduce or lower our standards, so we're only getting 20 to 25. High quality applicants, and we lose about 40% of those folks through the entire training program. So the community service officer program, as we continue to scale that, there's a percentage of those folks who do decide that they want to jump up and be police officer recruits. But the nice part is, if they go into the academy and they struggle or they don't make it, we can bring them right back down to our community service officer position. So it's such a win-win. And so that's the idea why we need to continue to double the size of that workforce, because then it's really just like planting a garden. It's easier to, you know, go to Albertsons to buy something, but if you plant it and you water it and you can see it, you know, to fruition, that's really the idea here.
So Prop 411, when it went through, the original Prop 101 had, I believe it was a 60% for public safety investment and 40% for the roads. When they reauthorized that half cent, the mayor and council wanted to focus on the roads, particularly neighborhood roads. So they went 100%. But that meant after 5 years, your flow for buying equipment, vehicles, body armor, things you need, came to an end. How are you making up for that now?
No, that's very accurate. So when 101 provided $15 million for fire a year, $15 million for police. Now understand, our budget's about 33% at the police department, larger than the fire department. So that spread didn't go as deep into, you know, providing equipment and benefit to the police department, but it was a lifeline for both of our organizations. It actually, one of the oversights of that strategy was it was the same time we were pulling the 911 center out of police and fire, so they didn't get any. So what happened when we changed the makeup of 101, we got the truth and taxation commitment from the voters, which was $18 million spread. So I can tell you, $18 million shared for three of us when is not enough, and I, you know, $25 million need every year, and you know, so I think that's going to have to be the ongoing dialogue with the community, is whether that capacity isn't in the general fund. So do we start talking about what another public safety sales tax could look like?
Well, that's another good tease. It's kind of like you're a regular on the radio. When we come back, we'll talk about where we can get there. And for those listening, we'll get into some of the issues in the city of Tucson with public safety. Chief Kazmar, appreciate having you so far on the show. And I know the second half hour is only going to get better. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 The Voice. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and that's Bruce Springsteen leading us into the second half of the show. My guest today is Chief Chad Kazmar with the Tucson Police Department. You've been in that chief's role now for
two and a half years. Yeah.
So does it seem longer than that?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. They're like dog years. So it is a 24/7 job. You asked me earlier, you know, you kind of started the line, but I don't think you finished the thought. But, you know, there's that saying, you never work a day in your life if you love what you do. And this is a family affair for my two boys and my wife and I and my extended family, because the job, there's no bright line anymore between work and home. It's like running your own business, and It's a 24/7 big machine that never turns off. So it's a, but it's just an honor and a privilege to lead such an amazing organization. Never thought in a million years I'd be the chief. So,
and I think that's a great point to bring up, because we are always pushing on the engagement hour to get involved, to find a way to serve, whether it's through a nonprofit, whether it's through your church or religious community. There's a lot of ways you can help the community be a better place. We often forget the families, and much like the military, which the families, I think, have come to the forefront on that. You don't always hear that with the public servants and the police force and the fire departments.
Right.
But the families serve.
The families are the real heroes, because we love what we do. We get to put on these superhero outfits and run towards danger and solve problems every day. And it's exciting. And we give so much of ourselves to the job. But that's at a cost. You know, the job changes you. You're exposed to 80% more trauma than the average human being. The officers who responded to that incident were four of our young community members were shot, provided medical first aid before fire got there. I mean, there's a cost associated to those things, and we go home, and then our families pay that price initially, and then they have to help us. They're the first wraparound service for us, and making sure that we're healthy and ready to come to work.
And in a lot of ways, you can't do it without that support at home.
You cannot.
And that sometimes, you know, it's a rough life, and members of the police department go through all the same stresses everybody else has, and sometimes they lose that support, and that's when the rest of the team and the resources you've provided them need to step in.
We do, and that's why suicide remains the number one killer of police officers, followed by vehicle collisions. And you know, I like to use analogies so folks outside of my industry can understand in my profession. But you know, we deferred maintenance. If you defer your maintenance on your house for 20 years, it costs a lot more to catch the fascia board. You can't just paint; you have to replace the fascia board. You might have to replace your roof instead of cool coating your roof. Well, mental health and public safety is the same thing, and we've been really heavily investing the last 3 years through our Struggle Well program with our partnership with Boulder Crest. We've created a wellness division. It's just the tip of the spear. We just launched on a grand opening of 3 workout spaces in our main station, thanks to the Sands Club, who raised over $67,000. That's the community saying, heck yeah, we support the public safety and we support law enforcement. In fact, here's almost $70,000 so you can invest in your physical wellness. And you know, that's thanks to some board members, Edmund Marquez and Rick at the Sands Club, and of course the Levine family is a very generous donor and supporter of the police department.
Absolutely, and the Levine family, I know Mike was just out in public talking about the impact that you've, through creative technology as well as intervention, made, already put a huge dent in the street racing issues. Not done yet, but
yeah, they were victims of that crime and at one of their facilities and having a lot of criminal damage, and so they were at the forefront of saying, hey, you know, there's a great example of a family and a business owner in the community saying, hey, we have this problem. Not only do we want to help you solve it, but how do we scale being awareness and get other businesses to be involved with being problem solvers with you?
Well, that's great to hear. I don't want to get away from what we teased coming in. Is we've talked about the care and feeding and support of your officers, but that includes the equipment they need, the personnel, body set, you know, armor and safety, modern technologies. They're coming all the time. Yet, you lost a big source of funding when Prop 411 did not have some public safety dollars in it. So what is it that you think are the most important needs in the that infrastructure piece of it? And what are your thoughts about how to get there? I know this mayor and council had kicked around, or not kicked around, they'd actually announced they were going to put a sales tax, undefined how much, on the ballot, and they were trying to get it there by July. That date, an opportunity has come and passed, so now we're looking maybe November at the earliest, which is going to be a crazy election year. But bottom line is, from your perspective, if they're going forward with public safety, what is it that you, what are your needs?
Sure. First, let me just start off to say it's a complex issue. We have a $2 billion city budget. We have a poor community, higher poverty rate than the rest of the country, and we have a sales tax driven funding infrastructure, right, which is not ideal.
Those are all problems.
All problems, and that contributes to a difficult job for the city manager, mayor, and the council to try to come up with covering a bunch of basic needs. So, you know, based upon charter direction, which is voter-driven, and essential needs, I'm a big advocate of holistic problem-solving. But again, at the foundation of that, we have over 200 Crown Victorias in my fleet still. They stopped making those in 2012. All of those vehicles by city standards have expired usable life, yet we still deploy them.
So that's a good example of one of the things I've been working with city leadership to say, okay, I don't need that $10 million in my budget, but it should probably be an ESGD in a transport, you know, somewhere in a budget for a fleet support budget. So we have a 20% replacement plan. So we don't get caught up in these pandemic related issues where I've had over 100 Pursuit Ford SUVs on order. But even with help from Mr. Click, you know, everybody in the country is waiting for those vehicles. And there's been manufacturing delays and problems. So the way that we get ahead of those types of things is have a standard set order that goes in every year, because we know how many miles we drive, we know how many we crash every year. It's something that we can get on a set ordering purchase, and when we do that, we get a higher ordering priority with Ford or Chevy or whoever we're ordering those vehicles.
Do you have the funds available to do that now?
I don't have general fund dollars in my budget for fleet, so we have to go through again the truth and taxation dollars is where we've pulled different funding. When we increase, like for example, when we added 50 new CSOs, community service officers, I was able to use impact fees. Dollars, which is amazing. Those are fees gathered when we have, you know, new growth in the city, and those dollars are earmarked for public safety and other needs. And I was able to order vehicles, but they're really expensive. You know, vehicles, a marked patrol vehicle has gone up 40% in the last 5 years. So just inflation is also just really killing us with our firearms, our ammunition, vehicle costs. $18,000 is what a light package goes for in one of these new Ford Mavericks that we're going to be putting our community service officers in. So basic needs, what I'd really like to continue to talk about is that $25 million number are just the essentials. That's just the essentials to make sure that we have the standard equipment that the community expects us to have. And if we can't find that in the general fund, which we haven't been able to the last 3 years, that's when we start looking towards a sales tax that in a percentage of that being dedicated towards public safety. So you teased, you know, for the listeners, it's unfortunate that we missed the July, because that would have been better timing, and I think we all feel that way, but for a variety of reasons that happened. But what I can tell you, Ted, and the listeners is that in polling that was led by police and fire, public safety, labor, support of public safety did poll well, and the community does want to make sure that public safety has equipment. And we polled a variety of different questions, including social needs in the community as well.
And I do believe that you find very few people that don't want to support public safety. So I think it sells very well on the ballot. We could have a long conversation if the half-cent sales tax or in the general fund, how it should go down in reality. But it does pull really well. But I think where it gets confusing is when it's not directly targeted towards the support of the officers. So body armor, weapons, vehicles, and right. We'll talk about aviation. We might get there. You know, yeah. I'm an aviation guy, but let's. Yeah. I don't want to go there first. Right now, you don't have a lot of funds to put towards that, and so it really, in some way, is not ensuring that our officers have the most protection and support they can.
Look, it's kind of like sending a plumber out to plumb a house without copper, Ted. So I'm a police chief, and I don't have a fleet budget. And I don't have a budget for guns, and I don't have a budget for less lethal, you know, general fund. I should not have to be negotiating those dollars every year. That's a distraction to me, focusing on reducing violent crime, working with community, building relationships, incentivizing recruiting, all those different things. So the time is now. This is my third budget cycle, and I'm not new to this. I was the second in command for over 6-7 years to Chris Magnus. I was a director at the 911 center, for an interim director for a year before I became chief. So I've got over a decade of experience with the city budget. I know how it works. I understand it. I know what the other limitations are within the budget. I know what our needs are. And so really, I've been driving and an advocate over the last 3 years of let's have the conversation about what a public safety sales tax, or a sales tax that has a large percentage of support for public safety, police, fire, emergency communications, to fund basic needs, and then also do some long-term planning. And I think that's, Ted, while 101 resonated with the voters, because we said we are going to do these exact things with the dollars you give us. We're going to buy body more cameras. We're going to buy X amount of vehicles, X amount of motorcycles. We're going to, you know, rehab these fire stations. And I think we can do that again with a future sales tax.
Well, I agree, but to me, there should be a piece of it. And I don't know if the community can influence this. Right now, the city is out polling for what their uses of the budget dollars should be. It would be great to see the police department have, because a sales tax is probably going to come with a sunset.
Absolutely.
And that's not a way to have to go every 5 years or, you know, maybe 10 for infrastructure or for public safety. When you have to keep going back and asking, do you always run the risk of the money not being there? And then what? And right now, because you're in a position where for a couple of years you haven't had that additional money, we're starting to right up against problems.
Right. So year one purchases of Prop 101 are now lifed out. Right. So those vehicles now are expiring.
And people don't understand.
Right. So those are all consumable needs. You know, capital improvement projects and buildings and those things have a longer lifespan. You know, for example, I need a station out at the southeast part of town. I have a training academy that was built over 20 years ago when we didn't have community service officers and professional staff investigators. Training needs have changed and the environment's changed and we need cooler spaces to train year round for our officers and our firefighters. Those are all things that we have to start thinking about how we invest. And for me, it's just simple math, Ted, and business. So these are the needs. They don't change. In fact, we can guarantee they're going to increase as all commodities do. And we have to, as a city, figure out what those needs are and how we want to fund those. And then if there's not support or political will with elected leaders or community, then we can have other conversations about what it means to may possibly have a metropolitan police department. I mean, we have to start having those types of conversations if we don't want to fund core services based upon what charter says we should do.
Yeah, well, I'd love to go down the metropolitan police department thing because I think that would be a huge change and potential benefit to the community, but we'll bring you back for another show on that one.
That would be one we'd probably want the Sheriff Nano with me here.
Yes, I think we would. The other thing I do want to leave with as we go to break is this is where the community can get involved. This is where the community can reach out, talk to their representatives, talk to their elected officials, their members of the council, their ward, the mayor. Let them know that you want Tucson Police Department and Tucson Fire to get the equipment they need. Yes, polling's great, and I've had access to some of that because we also helped fund that cause. But the polling, you can interpret a lot of different ways. What they need to do is hear from the community. So when we talk about what community members can do is support the men and women that serve and get vocal.
Great point, Ted. And that starts with me. And I'm sorry, SLSC did contribute. So I'm sorry I missed that. It starts with me being more vocal about what the need is. So people understand, in fairness to the voters, right? If they don't know, I think a lot of people would assume that 46% of the fleet would be funded every year, and it's not. And it hasn't been. It's no knock to our current city leadership. It's never been funded, and so it's trying to figure out a way how to do that.
Yes, and I will withhold that's part of the problem because public safety is one of the core principles of the charters. And
I think
it's easy to go to the voter and say, do you want to support public safety? Because the answer is yes. And so that's the challenge we face. So, Chief, I'm going to cut to a break. We probably ran that section a little long. And I want to get to the issues, but we always run out of time. So, everybody, that's Chief Chad Kazmar. You're listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And we'll be back in a moment. Good morning. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour. My guest today has been Chief Chad Kazmar, the chief of the Tucson Police Department. Chief, we're already running out of time. We've got about six more minutes, a little less than that.
It's gone fast.
It just flies. So I definitely appreciate during the break, I have already asked the chief to come back, and he's kind of agreed to. With all the issues you've got on supporting your police officers, the bottom line is you are still getting the job done, but there's a lot of criticism because of all the different things that are going on in our community. What's your 10,000-foot view right now on the success and the challenges that you face as a police department?
10,000-foot view is we have great need, but no excuses for me as the chief. We've got a job to do, and we're getting it done, and I couldn't be more proud of the team members who are out there every day and doing that. Violent crime is on is trended down almost 3 years in a row with the current leadership team. I couldn't be more proud of the effort of everybody who's contributed to that. That's largely through evidence-based strategies. We're paying attention to what we're doing. We're tracking the data. We're understanding what works and doing more of that. And when what doesn't, we're doing less of it. We did over 35,000 traffic stops last year. The traffic fatalities are through the roof. They're way higher than they should be. And there's a variety of reasons. the use of fentanyl in the shelter population is certainly a driver of that. Our proximity to the border, we continue to seize over 50% of the fentanyl in this country is seized in the state of Arizona. So its affordability has just made it just explode in this community. So that's an ongoing conversation and dialogue as a metropolitan government. That's, you know, under Jan Lesher's leadership, Ms. Ortega and the mayor, Natalita, and Laura Conover coming together going, okay, what, you know, is it working? Is the system working? Are we getting the results that we want? And if we don't, no finger pointing, but let's evaluate what system investments we need to make to have different outcomes. Over 1,200 narcotics arrests have been made year to date. That's up 3% and up 31% from our 5-year average. So even though we've lost about 5% of our commission staff every year until this year, less staff doing more work, and they're out there and they're really trying to do their part. It's going to be a tough 2 years in front of us with the fiscal challenges that the city has. And so we're going to have to continue to come together. I loved your call to action to the community. They have a voice. That starts with send us good people that want to join our workforce. Join TucsonPD.org. We have police officer recruit positions, community service officer positions. We're going to have another class of professional staff investigators this year. But we always need professional staff too, analysts, crime scene technicians. It's an amazing organization to work. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud. I hope, you know, one, if not both of my sons one day want to work for this organization.
Well, we all hope that's the case. And how can the community really help? I mean, we like to complain a lot when we see jaywalking 100 feet from an intersection. I know that running of red lights is occurring all the time. I mean, I literally rated 3 seconds the other day at First and Grant as two cars went through afterwards. What, other than following the law, how can we help you be more efficient at doing your job?
You named the biggest one. If we talk about traffic safety, is any more green doesn't mean go. It means look left and right, make sure nobody's going to run that light. Get engaged and be active. Know your council member. Know your board of supervisor. Be engaged. You know, public safety in this region needs your support. And we're still coming out of uncertain times where is it safe to support public safety vocally? And the answer is yes. So you can support housing first and you can support public safety all at the same time. And we hear that, right? You know, every budget cycle, there's five people that want to come out to council and talk about, you know, pulling some of my budget and giving it somewhere else. So investments in youth, you know, we didn't really get to touch on, and I know we're running out of time, but we have to start looking at, you know, immediate problems, but also what are the root cause solutions? So investment in our youth, after school programs, our athletic leagues, our parks having, you know, safe spaces for kids to play sports. Keeping youth engaged is an absolute panacea to all of the problems that we talk about, whether it's unsheltered, violent crime, poverty, you know, keeping kids here in our community. So we have to figure out, it's not just about investing in the police department, but paying attention during the legislative cycle, which just came to an end as well.
Well, you brought up a great point there at the end, is the next generations
it
are
is.
What we need. I mean, and we need people that, as the grandparents, which I'm fit that category now, or the parents, that we set the example of right and wrong. And that means everything from putting down our phones to obeying the traffic laws, and more importantly, to being engaged. That's what this show is about. Chief, I greatly appreciate your time with us today, and I look forward to having you back. I encourage everybody to tune in to Jump in Tucson tomorrow when Grant Krueger will be hosting the county attorney candidate, Mike Jetty. And please get out, get involved, support those who serve.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks, Tucson. Life's in front of you, not on your phone. Keep your eyes forward and get engaged.
Great closing. Everyone have a great day.